Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Legal in all 50 states, this is Tech News Today for Monday, December 13th, 2010. Tech News Today brought to you by Ford and Voice Activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more, available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles, and by the Eco-Imagination Challenge from GE. GE and its partners are awarding $200 million to ideas that help build the next generation power grid for the 21st century. For more information and to view and comment on the winning ideas, go to ecoimagination.com/challenge. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we take the tech, we put it up in front of our eyes, we examine it from all sides.
And ask ourselves, will the tech blend?
And it will. Boy, will it.
It does every time.
It's a hacky day. I'm glad you're on the show today, Darren.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back.
We got a little bit of hackiness about Amazon. We got some hackiness around Gawker, of course. You probably heard about that by now. But we're going to start with non-hackiness. Unless you consider this social engineering, but Google under fire from all sides on many of the sides. It's a Wall Street Journal article with complaints from companies like TripAdvisor, WebMD, and CitySearch saying that Google stacks the deck against them. This is the exact same complaint that they got in Europe, where the European Commission is now investigating them for not allowing other search engines to show up when people search for things.
Yeah. Well, whose site is it again?
It's Google's. It's a search engine. Why would they allow other search engines? I mean, okay, yes, it would be good for Google to give you fair and equal results. But what TripAdvisor and others are saying...
Yeah, WebMD.
Is when you... WebMD is a great example. When
yeah, because there's the Google Health.
You search for a health thing, Google Health comes up first instead of WebMD.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. When I search on Bing, I imagine Microsoft's going to want to give you their built-in stuff as well.
Right. Yeah, it's the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what Google's search engine is trying to do is get you to information fast. If Google has information built in that they think is good, they're going to give you that information fast first because it's faster that way. And if it sucks, you actually have a choice to go use other search engines.
And it's not like they're not putting, you know, WebMD or CitySearch up on the listings at all. It's not like they're, removing the competition. They're just saying, hey, we got some stuff in-house you might want to check out, right?
And the thing is, Google is actually under attack because it has such a large percentage of the market share. If they didn't, there'd be absolutely no merit to this kind of attack because Google actually is playing very nicely in this game.
Mm-hmm.
They are prioritizing some of their results first because they do that with Google Images, for instance.
Yeah.
That's, I think, another good example. When you search for images, Google Image Search comes up first rather than Flickr.
Oh.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't realize. But Flickr is a very specialized kind of, that I think more photographs than just images.
You're
not going to get your animated GIF
on
files.
Images on Flickr.
True.
Just saying. Okay. It's anti-competitive for Google to put their image
it's their
search
place.
Up.
I just did a search for health. What was the first result? WebMD. So, now my question is, if it's within the search results, all right, and if they're really going to whine and complain that much, you know what Google could do? Add a little box that's exclusive only to Google properties and be like, oh, if we have something that's relevant here, we'll put our stuff in that box. And guess what? It's not the result.
And Google was a little snotty about this, but they said, we make our site for the users, not for other websites.
Yeah.
And that's not what you're saying would not be as good of an experience for the users because it wouldn't have the information integrated. So, really what Google should do is have the best, most relevant results show up,
yeah,
no matter who they are. And that's what these sites are saying, is we're more relevant.
And okay.
It's their opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Microsoft, on the other side, starting something called fairsearch.org to persuade the U.S. Department of Justice to block Google's proposed purchase of ITA software. ITA software is travel data,
right?
That is used to provide data to a lot of travel search engines, including Kayak, as well as Expedia, and Microsoft Bing.
Well, are they? You're going to have to explain this one to me because I'm not sure if they're afraid that because they get access to this data that they're going to be irrelevant going to be able to get access to it themselves.
So there's two problems. One is saying, well, wait a minute, we have so many search engines reliant on this data. Mm-hmm. If you let another search engine buy it, that could just be anti-competitive on its own, because then one search engine controls all the travel data. And that's not good, because we might get an unfair deal in paying for it. Google says, no, we're going to keep it fair. But of course, they're going to say that. The other side of it is them saying Google could actually take advantage of the data first, even though they're paying for it, and get better data, give better data to themselves because they own ITA.
And do what with? Just offer
and show
you
better search results faster.
Okay, so if you're searching accurate for a flight or something, just maybe like have it like when you search for some song and it pops up at the top where you can
let's say a fare change happens.
Okay.
ITA is running on Google servers. That fare change propagates to the Google index immediately. It takes a little while to get replicated over to Bing.
Oh.
So you're always getting the faster, more accurate search results on Google.
But everybody's paying for it.
Yeah, except Google, because they own ITA.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
If they were to own ITA. Anyway, fairsearch.org's members include Kayak, Bing, and a bunch of other folks like Hotwire. Well, Hotwire and TripAdvisor are owned by Expedia. So this is a big move against Google owning ITA. There may actually be an antitrust issue here.
Yeah,
I think it's a
legitimate concern. Yeah.
And I don't just say that because of my last name. GigaOM has an article about a report from ITG research analyst Matthew Goodman showing that the iPhone actually sells more in the United States in Q3 than all of Verizon's smartphones put together.
Right.
So just the iPhone on AT&T totally outselling Verizon by quite a bit.
Outselling, like, so that's a single phone outselling all of Verizon's BlackBerries, all of their Android phones, all of their WebOS devices. Are there still WebOS devices?
Yeah. There's a Palm Pre.
Of course. Not
two,
trying to hate on
Palm Pre 2.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's quite interesting. And like, they, in this article, suggest that Verizon really needs the iPhone. And I agree that would, you know, be great for them. But, you know, that's if their plan is to dominate completely the market. You know,
it's also bad news for RIM, because BlackBerry devices accounted for more than 90% of Verizon's smartphone sales 14 months ago. Now they're less than 20%.
Mm. Wow.
Ouch. That's a huge
drop. That's significant.
Yeah. And Android is taking over.
Yeah.
Verizon's biggest selling smartphones are Android. Android growing in the amount of them.
I think, you know, partly because they haven't had iPhone. I wonder what's going to happen, you know, when eventually Verizon, or if they do get the iPhone, you know, what that means to Android and Windows Mobile on their network.
I don't think it necessarily means anything bad for Android on their network. It could dampen the growth, but I think it would still grow. It would just be good for Verizon. I think a bunch of people would switch to Verizon.
And potentially not so good for AT&T as a result as well.
Yes and no.
Right? Like, if everybody they'd lose people.
Yeah, but
maybe. I think people overestimated how many people would flock to AT&T to get the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And I think people are overestimating how many people will leave their carrier to go to Verizon if Verizon gets the iPhone.
Yeah, but
if leaving your carrier is not very easy in the United States. So once people start looking at that early termination fee, you're gonna stick. You're not gonna move.
And you would need a new device. You'd need to buy a new phone in order to do that, because the one you have and have been using doesn't work on that network. So.
Sure, but if there was no, you know, barrier like that with the device or with the cancellation, and you know the perception that Verizon has a more solid network, if everybody that was currently on AT&T with the iPhone just like switched over, well, wouldn't that just make AT&T's network better and Verizon's worse? You know,
well, there have been stories about how Verizon's network is not as good as Android devices proliferate and people are using more data on Verizon than they used to.
Yeah.
But I think still, even with that, Verizon still has tested in several reports as the best data network for accessibility across the country. So
yeah.
It may be capacity. It may also be management. Hard to tell.
Good stuff.
Ah, yes. Gawker. Finally, let's get around to this. Over the weekend, Gawker was hit on Saturday, actually, by a group called Gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S, who explained that they didn't like Gawker's attitude. So they broke into the site, cracked into their database, and downloaded a bunch of data, including email addresses and passwords of everyone who has logged in and made comments and created accounts on Gawker sites.
Right, not just a couple of people either. There's supposedly 1.3 million user names and passwords. And, you know, actually, what I found
and was the source code of Gawker's websites.
Right.
As well,
so, you know, if you're interested in the PHP framework or the back end of those blogs, hey, that's actually a lot of intellectual property. And I think that if there is like a single entity to litigate, that's probably even more than just the user
the more
database.
Valuable.
More valuable, yeah.
But the thing that's more likely to affect you is the fact that they might have gotten your username and password, which means, okay, so you need to change your password on Gawker. Now that Gawker says that they've resecured their site, go change your password on Gawker.com. But also, as we've often preached, you shouldn't have the same password for everything, and a lot of people do. So if some nefarious person gets a hold of this data from the Gawker database, cracks the hash algorithms that are encrypting, because they weren't storing the passwords in plain text, they were encrypted passwords. But if they crack that, which wouldn't be that hard, they could then take your password and try it out on all your other accounts.
Exactly. In fact, some hackers have been doing exactly that and posting spam to people's Twitter accounts where they've used the same password on their Twitter and their account on Gawker.
Yeah, and some spam. It's mostly taken the form of spam, right?
Right. Yeah. And also interesting to note that there's out of the passwords that they harvested, 2,650 users used the password quote password or QWERTY.
I guess
there will always be a subset of people using those passwords.
My first reaction to that was, I bet these are people who don't use that password elsewhere, and figured, I don't care.
Mm-hmm. One of the users with a .gov email address and three of them from .mil addresses.
Yeah, I looked into, actually, there's a, we should mention this, there is a way to check to see if your email address was in the hacked file. H.D. Moore, Chief Security Officer at Rapid7, yeah, has...
They make Metasploit stuff.
Has put up a Google Doc of all the MD5 hashes and the domain names, and what you can do is go to pajhome.org.uk/crypt/MD5, enter your email address, and it will turn it into an MD5 hash. You can then take that hash and search this Google Doc, see if it shows up.
Right, so it isn't, you know, publicly listed everybody's email address either. So yeah, that's good stuff.
But that will tell you, and so all he's doing is listing the hashes of the email addresses, but this lets you know, this is a way to look and find out if your email address is there. You could also, I did a little domain name searching to see if there was no revision3.com.
Oh.
There were no twit.tvs.
Nice.
There were a few cnet.coms. I was just looking for coworkers, past
right.
and present.
Mm.
And then I was looking around at NASA. There was a good handful of NASA.govs and some .mils.
But you just popped it in there and...
Yeah, I just looked at for the domain name.
Okay, because I don't know if that would work, because if it was hashing the domain...
He's got the domain names down.
Oh, okay. I was about to say...
You don't have to hash them.
Yeah. All right. Because you could do like a partial hash lookup. That just wouldn't work.
Lifehacker has a good FAQ up, by the way. If you need to know details, if you're really concerned about this, go to lifehacker.com and they've got the FAQ. And one thing is, if you used Facebook Connect...
Exactly where I was going, yeah.
Your stuff is safe, right?
Exactly, yeah. Now, part of the problem here is Gnosis actually suggests that Gawker was using the DES encryption algorithm to store their passwords, which is trivial to crack. Whereas he could use something a little bit more secure. Well,
yeah.
Not like SHA-1 and MD5
at least
aren't.
Some store in plain text. So I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Not ideal, but at least they encrypted at all. The biggest issue, though, is how many people use the same password for everything. And the reason people do that is because they don't want to have to remember 500 million different passwords, and that's understandable. MIT on their technologyreview.com had an article suggesting a four-tier system where you'd only have to remember four passwords. But we were talking about this in the pre-show, and the problem with that is even if you followed this and you've got four tiers and there's one tier that's like passwords you don't really care about, you use over and over and over, that part's okay. Throwaway sites where if someone cracked into it, it wouldn't be a big deal. So someone goes on Last.fm and likes some things for you because they figure out your password. I guess that's low damage. So that might be okay.
Well,
once you go up into your email account and your bank accounts, if you use the same password, even just across your bank accounts, all they have to do is get one, and then they get all of them.
Right. Well, also getting those you know, easy to guess, you know, pass or not easy to guess, but your quote unquote BS passwords, your ones for the throwaway sites, right? Those are actually kind of important too, because say like, you know, I got your Last.fm, I could use it to contact your other friends that you have on that social network and use
and
it to impersonate you, do some social engineering. So I think you should treat all of these, you know, with the same level security and have a complex password. And really, it comes down to either coming up with your own personal algorithm that's going to make sense to you, take use of the domain name, take use of the Whois record, the DNS records, and come up with something, you know, use some transposing on the keyboard or however you like to come up with something both long and, you know, easy to remember, or use a password manager. And there are plenty out there to choose from.
The Gnosis people actually only got the first 8 letters of every password.
Well, yeah, that's all they
needed. So if you used a password that was longer than 8 letters, then they weren't getting your password.
Yeah.
So that's another argument for having long passwords, having different passwords for every account. You mentioned algorithms.
Right. It's the same thing.
You could come up with an algorithm that makes it easy to remember how to derive your password so that if you forget it, maybe it has a root part that's the same, but you add different letters to it every time based on the site. You were saying something where instead of like in the MIT article, they suggested putting the first and last letter from the domain name there. But then that's guessable. If somebody really wants to hack you,
there's more unique identifiable information about a domain than just its domain name. If you're willing to, you know, use tools like NSLookup or Dig or even just the Whois database to peer into, you know, the records of
that's a really fantastic, like, I really like that idea because you know where to go to get it, but it's not so easily accessible that it's right in front of
Although,
you.
Although the weakness in that is anybody who figures that out then has figured out your algorithm. I mean, that's going to be true for any algorithm. That's why I know
password
Steve
managers
Gibson
are great,
on Security Now recommends using LastPass. I use 1Password, but it's Password Manager.
Yeah.
And what that does is, you have one very strong password to get into the password manager, and then everything is encrypted between you and the password manager, and then it creates long, very secure passwords for every site you visit.
Right, and it's important to have a long and very secure password for all of these sites because, you know, you don't know what's behind the curtain. In this case, it was some trivial security, and in fact, they didn't even use SSL, so anybody using like FireSheep or EtherCap or some other fun tools could sniff your password in plain text while you're trying to log into the site, regardless of how poorly they, you know, keep it in the database.
Also, McDonald's got their database hacked today. So, Gizmodo, Gawker, don't feel so bad. It even happened to Ronald.
Ronald? No. Yeah,
he got hacksword.
Oh.
Ronald been owned. All right, let's take a moment and
from a Gibson.
Thank our sponsor, Ford, makers of voice-activated sync. You've heard us talk about it. It's great stuff. You get in a Ford. If you got a Bluetooth phone, it automatically connects. You got wireless. You keep your hands on the wheel, and then you just talk. You can say, you know, find that winery, and then it finds the winery while you're driving around in wine country. That's what it was doing for me and my sister and brother-in-law. You can say, skip this song. Check this playlist. You get a text message. Don't reach down and try to read it while you're driving. That's dangerous. Have voice-activated sync read it to you. It's true hands-free calling. And it's the safest way to do stuff like that because you keep your hands on your wheel and the eyes on the road. And there's a new program from Ford called the 2012 Ford Focus Global Test Drive. Here's what they want to do. They want you to pick a charity that you would like them to give $10,000 to, right? Okay, that's very nice. But what do you get out of it? You get flown to Spain to test drive the Ford Focus, the 2012 Ford Focus at Spain's National Aerospace, Spain's National Institute for Aerospace Technology. If you have the best video, so make a video, keep it less than 2 minutes, keep it concise, keep it compelling, put it up at twitfordfocus.com by December 31st. You could be chosen to win. $10,000 goes to a charity of your choice, and you get flown to Madrid to test drive the 2012 Ford Focus. So get on over there, start your video, get it loaded up, take a look at the other videos. You want some ideas? There's some up there. You can already take a look at them, make comments on them. TwitFordFocus.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Amazon was down this weekend. Was it anonymous? Did they get pwned? Did they get hacksword? Amazon says no. Their European sites were not brought down by a denial of service attack.
The router broke from all the packets.
Too many packets? Can your router break if it just has too many packets in it?
Stuffed.
It just cracks open.
Yeah. I know that if you point F0 to F0 on some Cisco stuff, you can eat your own tail. But
that's like putting auto exec bat in the auto exec bat.
Yeah. I accidentally did that too.
In the path.
To a PIX once. But anyway, you know, good on them for... Well, the thing is, Amazon has to come out and say, whoa, this wasn't a denial of service attack, because that would show that, hey, they're susceptible to that sort of thing. And you know, in this holiday buying season, that'd be just very detrimental
to the brand. But
there
was some doubt that Anonymous was even conducting a denial of service attack at the time. Mm-hmm. So it makes, it does, I don't think they're lying. Do you?
No.
No, I think there really was a hardware failures do happen.
Right.
That's a big story on its own.
Well, the thing is, if they were, you know, if Anonymous was, they would have, like, you know, spoken up and be like, called Amazon out and be like, ah, don't even try to blame it on your, you know, stupid router or switch.
Yeah.
It was totally us. We're hacktivists.
By the way, if you are participating in one of these Anonymous attacks, you should know that the low orbit ion cannon, which is the software of choice in conducting denial of service attacks, doesn't mask your IP address. Because low orbit ion cannon, for those of you out there wondering, why is this software even legal? LOIC is made to test your own network to
right.
see how responsive it is to denial of service attacks, to see what the load it can handle is. And so it doesn't need to mask the IP address because you know you're conducting the test on yourself.
Right. Then, you know, in order to get the effectiveness that they, you know, that the Anonymous would like, they kind of have to use a generic tool like this that doesn't bother trying to mask it, because by doing things like that, like if you were to, for example, try to run all of your DDoSes through Tor, all you do is bring down Tor.
Yeah.
You know, and if you try to, you know, spoof your packets and say that they're from someone else, well, a lot of ISPs are going to see that, you know, coming from their gateway and be like, well, that's not even on my network, and drop it completely before it hits the open internet. So, you know, for the most effectiveness, you kind of have to state who you are.
And yes, you can rely on some security through obscurity, because if you're in a denial of service attack, potentially there's tons of traffic coming in and they may not capture and try to investigate your particular IP address.
Right. Because
that's how they got the Dutch kid they arrested last week.
Yeah. So if there's a DDoS going on MasterCard and you not involved, you know, not even fired up your low orbit ion cannon, you've got it, you know, in hibernate mode, just chilling in space, and you decide, I'm going to go over to MasterCard.com. You're helping the problem, because you're asking for, you know, them to you know, query some databases and give you a web page anyway.
Yeah.
But that isn't to say that the there isn't a kind of a what is it called, like a profile or a signature of what an attack from an LOIC client looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So sure, you're protected through obscurity. That, you know, if there's tens of other thousands of people using this and attacking this site, you're just one of the swarm. But that's not to say that,
that's,
you know,
not
if
to
they
say
decide
you're,
to litigate,
yeah,
you're not completely...
You may
prepared.
Be discoverable.
Right.
A secret grand jury is apparently meeting in Virginia to decide whether to bring charges of violating the 1917 Espionage Act against Julian Assange. So we'll wait to find out a little more about that. A leak about Julian Assange, his OkCupid profile, has been made public.
No.
It was already public. He just didn't have his name on it. He called himself Harry Harrison on his OkCupid profile. Although when you read the description, I would think Julian Assange. He describes himself as passionate and often pig-headed activist intellectual, seeks siren for love affair, children, and occasional criminal conspiracy.
Ooh.
First, a lot of people thought this was a hoax, but OkCupid says, as far as we know, this is Julian Assange. We don't think it's a hoax. There's too much detail in the profile and in the account. So, you know, even leakers who flee across countries and fight interdiction,
they're
and
just looking for love.
That's just, yeah, everybody needs some love,
yeah.
You know, and you know, kudos to him for being forthright with his profile. Exactly what he wants,
yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And he leaked it. Well, he didn't leak it. Supreme Court decided not to hear an appeal from Costco over selling expensive Omega watches, thus meaning at least in the Ninth Circuit of the United States, you cannot sell trademarked goods that were created overseas without the permission of the owner of the trademark.
Well, what does that mean to the right of first sale, where you're allowed to sell used goods?
There's no right of first sale overseas.
Oh.
In fact, that's what the Ninth Circuit found, was that would be applying U.S. copyright law overseas, and we can't do that. Because the copyright law is the one that gives you the right of first sale.
I understand that global economics are tricky and a company may want to sell the same product at different prices in different markets.
Yeah, that's essentially what was going on here. Omega watches, just for a little background, had sold some Omega watches overseas at a very low price. Costco went, bought some of these on what's called the gray market, which is they didn't buy them from Omega. They bought them from somebody else at a very low price, and then were selling them really cheap in the United States. Omega said, you can't sell that. It's got our trademark on it. Costco said, we have the right of first sale. Court said, nah, those watches were made overseas. You don't have the right of first sale anymore.
So does this mean that anybody that sells something in the United States needs to first contact the rights holder, the manufacturer, and make sure that it's that hasn't been imported from overseas to make sure they have the legal right to sell it?
If what you are selling has been manufactured overseas, then you might not have the right to sell it.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot.
That's a lot of business. That's a lot of eBay. That's a lot of Craigslist. That's a lot of Amazon.
This is just Ninth Circuit. Yeah, you're right. This totally affects eBay. You know, anybody that does this mean that they're going to have to start policing auctions to make sure that, I don't know.
One weird thing about this is the court actually split 4-4 because Justice Elena Kagan, who has just been added to the court most recently, the newest justice, had to recuse herself from the case. It's fairly normal for newer justices to have to recuse themselves from certain cases because they were working as lawyers often right up until becoming chief justices.
Right.
Or they had been working as lawyers, you know,
sure,
in a case. And so we don't know. Kagan might have caused this to be accepted or not. Anyway, it'll probably come to court in other circuits in the United States, go up through the system, and may show up at the Supreme Court again.
This would just be interesting to see what that means to things sold digitally, you know?
Yeah.
Where are the routers?
Where is it manufactured?
Yeah, exactly.
Where is your file manufactured?
Ooh.
If I...
That'd be an interesting...
If I'm working on a cloud system that's based in the UK, is my file manufactured in the UK, even though I'm sitting here in the United States?
Now, when I look at all my open office docs, I want to check the metadata and see that it's got the seal that says made in the USA.
What server was my Google Doc created on?
Uh-oh.
All right. The FCC is going to have a showdown on December 21st. I'm doing that from memory, and I shouldn't do that. But they've got their net neutrality order up for debate soon. We talked about Julius Genachowski putting out the platform in the debate. Nobody likes it. The industry thinks it's too heavy-handed. The consumer groups think it doesn't go nearly far enough because it leaves wireless undone. Now, one of the FCC commissioners, a Democrat, Mignon Clyburn. Is it Mignon? Because it's M-I-G-N-O-N.
Mignon.
He's one of the minions.
Yeah, he's one of them.
M. Clyburn told the Practicing Law Institute's annual telecommunications summit that she still has many questions about the proposal and thinks that there ought to be net neutrality provisions put in place on wireless. So this is not going to be pretty.
They are just remove expletive packets. I don't care what the transfer medium is. And good that this is that it's gotten to this point. But, oh, man, this is just going to be even more long and drawn out than ever.
The Republicans don't like it. Now the Democrats don't like it. Nobody likes it. Poor Genachowski. Just kind of sitting there in the middle. Nobody loves it.
Aww.
Oh. Let's take a break. Pour a little out for Genachowski. And thank GE and the makers of the GE Eco Imagination Challenge. What GE has been doing is trying to encourage innovation in three different areas of environmental research. So they want to do something in your home. They want to make it easier for you to save money in your home. They want renewable energies, better ways to integrate renewable energy into the power grid, energy that comes from wind, water, and sun. And they want to improve transparency at every step of the grid from power generation to consumption. So what they're doing is the Eco Imagination Challenge. They're partnering with others to make $200 million available to invest in great ideas in each of these areas, renewable, grid efficiency, and eco homes. To learn more and read the winning ideas, and you can comment on them. You can read the winning ideas and say, hey, I think this is a great idea. Here's a tweak that I would make to it. Go to ecoimagination.com/challenge. That's ecoimagination.com/challenge. And we thank GE for supporting Tech News Today as well as Green Tech Today. New episode of Green Tech Today coming up live today after forecast at 5 o'clock Pacific. Or check it out on iTunes or twit.tv. We thank GE for their support. On now to the news fuse. Nissan delivered the first Nissan Leaf electric car this weekend. Olivier Chalouhi, C-H-A-L-O-U-H-I, from the San Francisco area, got the first one, a shiny black number. New Leafs What would it be? Leaves.
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 Yeah.
Leafses.
Also arrived in Arizona, Southern California, Oregon, Seattle, and Tennessee. A second batch of Nissan's all-electric hatchbacks coming on December 20th, with the company promising a nationwide U.S. launch for 2012.
U.S. District Judge Marsha Peachman dismissed Paul Allen's famous patent case in which he sued pretty much everyone except for Microsoft. Judge Peachman stated that Allen didn't specify which of his competitors' products actually infringed on the patents. This lawsuit named Apple, Google, Facebook, Yahoo, AOL, eBay, Netflix, Office Depot, Office Max, and Staples as violating his patents.
Who didn't he name?
Microsoft.
You and the handful of tech bloggers who cared can be very excited now. The Google Latitude app for geolocation and check-ins has finally arrived for the iPhone. Latitude was submitted to the App Store back February 2009.
Ooh, it took a while.
That's back when the president's approval rating was still above 50%. Caused quite a stir when it was not approved back then, but hey, better late than crushed by Foursquare and Facebook, except maybe crushed.
So remember that talk about that API and the new iOS 4.0 that would allow Apple to detect jailbroken iPhones? Yeah, they kind of just dropped that API, gave no explanation, and yeah, it comes in perfect time too, because Tuesday, Stefan Esser from Sketten Enos, he'll be demonstrating a new tool called Antidote with a zero for lateness, which reportedly adds something called ASLR, which stands for Address Space Layout Randomization, onto jailbroken iOS devices, actually making them more secure by randomizing the location of sensitive data.
Would that be section 1?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm
just guessing too.
Yeah, I'll take emails on that one.
A new FCC report claims that 68% of connections in the United States advertised as broadband fall below the agency's most recent minimum requirement of 4 megabits per second down and 1 megabits per second up. Those of you in Europe, Japan, and Korea, please stop laughing at our definition of broadband. It's already bad enough. We don't even have 68% of the people at our lame definition of broadband. In other words, more than two-thirds of broadband internet connections in the U.S. are not even close to broadband. At the same time, Forrester Research just came out with a study that says U.S. folks spend as much time online as they do watching television. It's now reached parity for everyone.
Nice. Yeah. That's good stuff.
We need the internet.
So, Tom, did you get one of those new CR48 laptops from Google with the new Chrome OS?
Yeah, no, I didn't get one.
You didn't get one of those? Oh, dude, guess who did?
Leo got one.
Oh, well, also, Sylvian Zimmer.
Oh,
he got
one?
Yeah. See, he was the first to figure out a Mensa-certified puzzle that was in the background of one of the Chrome videos scrawled onto a chalkboard. The message decoded into speed and destroy. He put that through goog.gl, their URL shortening, and it took him to a page congratulating for him for being the first to figure it out. So congratulations.
That was a good piece of detective work, Sylvain.
Yeah, good stuff. That's an Easter egg if I ever heard one.
You know, it turns out that Netflix is on to something.
Ooh, what?
Yeah.
DVDs by mail?
Research firm Instat claims sales of both DVDs and Blu-ray discs are expected to decline by $4.6 billion between 2009 and 2014. Blu-ray on its own is going to rise slightly, but not nearly enough to make up for the fantastic dive in DVD sales that is expected. Instat predicts streaming content and digital downloads will fill in the gap, and they're going to be the blame for the decline of the optical disc.
Woo! Roku's for everyone.
Yay!
Or something.
Stream it.
Yay. I like that idea. You know what it is?
What time is it?
It's patent snatching time!
Woo!
Apple and Google are going at it, too, because there are some fresh patents to be, you know, scraped up here. Lots of good 3G stuff and some 4G stuff. Turns out that Canadian telecom company Nortel, their patent portfolio is it's being watched by the Hawks, you know.
They're patent trolls.
Yeah.
They're picking over the patent
Unnamed sources over at Reuters confirmed that two of the companies, among others, are participating in the first round of bids on Nortel's IP portfolio.
Look at that. Poor Nortel.
Wonder what they'd do with
this.
Poor
little out for him. All right. Finally, strawberry picking robot. This is a robot that is being created that knows when the strawberries are ripe and then slides along a little track, reaches out with its pincer, and grabs only the ripe strawberries and picks them.
Once again, my childhood memories being crushed, not by George Lucas this time.
What?
But by robots.
Why?
All of those amazing summers in Florida and other fun states of the U.S., just picking strawberries, you know, fun wholesome family activity to do in the spring and just not happening anymore because the robots have taken over.
Well, the robots got to have fun too, right?
Well, these robots are having fun very slowly.
These are Japanese robots from IM Brain. That's an acronym. Stands for Institute of Agricultural Machinery's Bio-Oriented Technology Research Advancement Institution.
I bet that is not a backronym.
They spent most of their dev funding coming up with that name.
Yeah, agreed.
It has a stereo camera system that images the strawberries in 3D. Image processing algorithms gauge the ripeness, and if a berry is at least 80% red, the machine neatly snips it at the stem and deposits it in a bin.
Hooray for strawberries.
Woohoo.
Delicious story.
Delicious story. All right, on to the calendar. Top trends on Twitter are out. There's actually some top YouTube videos as well. Top Twitter trend. Want to make it any guess? Anybody who hasn't already read the story? Number one, Gulf oil spill. Not Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber is actually number 8 on the list. FIFA World Cup, number 2. Inception, the movie, number 3. Beating out Haiti earthquake. Really, world? I mean, Inception was a great movie, but come on. Vuvuzela at number 5, Apple iPad number 6, Google Android 7, Bieber at 8, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows at 9, and that movie only came out in November.
Yeah, no kidding.
Pretty hot trend. And then Pulpo Paul at number 10.
At least Bieber made the list. I'm just saying. Man, that was a close one.
The Sony PS3 will start streaming ITV and Channel 4 content in the UK this week. So Sony made PS3 becoming a real player in the streaming video space now. Yeah. They had a little ways to catch up, but I think they're about there.
Break out your UK VPNs and watch yourself some Channel 4 in the US. I mean, just something else.
We've mentioned the competitor to WikiLeaks, the former WikiLeaks members who are starting OpenLeaks.
Yes!
They've launched their website today. Here it is. This is
do we have exclusive?
If you go to openleaks.org,
it's not.
Oh no!
There we go. I just had to move the cursor.
Yeah,
it looks like they're working on
it. That's not openleaks.org. Oh. No, they have a real site up, yes. Jason. Bring up the real site. You're just making fun of them because there's much more going on at the openleaks.org. There it is.
Not that much.
Pretty
is
much
it, so?
The
is this
thing.
The I don't want to say Web 2, but this is the modern day equivalent of. Of Man on Yellow Sign.
This is the new Man on Yellow Sign. That's the OpenLeaks logo. Oh, okay. And the reason it only says coming soon is they've started the site, but they haven't actually published anything about the leaks. Because their idea is not to just take the leaks and put them up on the web. Their idea is to take in leaks and then give them to news organizations. And then they're going to publish summaries of what the news organizations report about the leaks. T-Mobile is dropping the G2 to $50 on contract here in the U.S.
It's not bad. That's a nice Android phone. That's
it is.
Expensive. And T-Mobile, not so bad.
It's the successor to the G1.
Yep.
And is it too late to be a part of TNT this holiday season, Jason?
Is it too late? No, it's never too late. Well, actually, it will be too late very soon, but still it's not. So go to bit.ly/TNT Holiday 2010 or submit a best of at twit.tv/best of because that's where we're really needing a little bit more, but I think we're close.
Let's read a couple emails before we wrap up here. Darren, you got
I got Russ's email here. He's from Kingston, Jamaica, and he's a little behind on the podcast, but yeah, he says in Jamaica he suspects that other Caribbean territories are for the most part BlackBerry.
BlackBerry country.
Yeah, dude, BlackBerry all the way. Actually, he didn't say that. That's just me. But he did say, yep, as a smartphone, it's on the top of the heap. iPhone at all, just don't cut it out here. It's cool and chic, but not as practical as a BlackBerry, which has a keypad, handles messaging like a snap. And with the data plan, it's much more affordable than most. And then he goes on to say that Nokia, of course, rule the dumb phone market.
No. Why am I booing?
Yeah, that's right. Come on, Nokia.
Nokia, go. Nokia FTW. Also emailing in to TNT at twit.tv, Oscar in El Paso said, hey, I can't understand why you constantly use the phrase hack when referring to the alternative uses for Kinect. The device itself has in no way been hacked, as neither the software nor hardware for Kinect have been modified. An actual Kinect hack would be if someone figured out how to load new firmware onto the Kinect, so I could cheat on Dance Central, which no one has been able to do because of safeguards. That is what Microsoft has been saying all along. Read their quote on tampering again if you don't believe me. Even CNET, when they started reporting on Kinect hacks, referred to them as open source Kinect drivers. But the media, in their attention-grabbing way, decided to call them hacks when they're not. So I actually wrote back to Oscar and I said, well, I use the word hack to mean any kind of workaround, the broad sense of hacking with stuff. What he's describing to me, it would be a crack.
right.
actually cracking into the firmware and installing your own firmware. He wrote back and said, thank you for responding. My definition of hack doesn't mean a lot. It is the general public's view of the word that I'm associating to it. When the average Joe reads the headline Kinect hacked, he probably thinks, well, Kinect must have pretty bad security, when this is not the case.
Sure, but you know what? I got to say, the media is at least doing a better job than a lot of times when they take the word hack out of context and they what they really mean is crack, you know, like Gawker, for example. But I'm not going to get too semantic about it. Regardless, I'm just happy that there's fun open source homebrew stuff being done, whether it's hacked or modded or however you want to call it. It's a good thing.
Yeah. And I wouldn't worry too much about people seeing the word hack and being able to make a distinction that you're making. That's the other thing. Oscar's like, well, I don't want Microsoft to get a bad name for this. But the fact is, even if it's just that they were able to read out the USB system,
yeah,
that to people that are going to be confused between hack and crack is going to sound like a crack.
Yeah.
Even if it's not.
Here's a perfect example of a hack. Over at Rev3, we've got a process that's going to rye creating a bunch of log files on a server. And while we try to track down what exactly is the process and what's invoking it, you know, in the meantime, we got to keep that space free. So what do we do? A little cron tab options with a little RM, RF action, you know, a little delete command that just runs every couple hours to clear out those log files. Is it a solution? No. Is it a workaround? Yeah. So it's kind of considered a hack.
A little duct tape around the server. Electrical tape, keeping the degrading
that's
wire.
A little twine, if you will. Yeah.
All right. If you want actually some more hacks, why don't you watch Hack 5 with Darren Kitchen?
Oh, yeah. If you're into time division multiplexing, pulse code modulation, pulse amplitude modulation, or the Nyquist theorem, that's what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, you got getting some good stuff there.
Yeah, I broke out the whiteboard, and I'm having a lot of fun with some not necessarily super practical, but lots of fun theory that'll explain why your compact discs are encoded at 44.1 kilohertz.
HAK5.org?
HAK, the number 5.
.org?
.org.
Oh, so you're a nonprofit. That's cool. All right. You can also find us on the web, twit.tv. Check us out live every day at 5:30 Eastern Time, 2:30 Pacific. And email us, TNT at twit.tv. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We don't always fit them into the show, but we always listen to them. And you can also email us voicemails and video links as well, TNT at twit.tv. We'll see you tomorrow.